Hello and welcome to episode 19 of series 4 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Right, I'm just going to give you a quick heads up on what we've got coming up in the next couple of episodes. So on the 26th of September, I have an interview with Jennifer Krippner from the Institute of Healthcare Excellence. Jennifer's going to be telling us all about how you can deal with organizational burnout. Jennifer works in the American healthcare system, but regardless of whether you work in the healthcare system or in the UK or another part of the world, I think what Jennifer will be sharing with you, we will find useful in terms of dealing with organizational burnout, which is a challenge we hear a lot about in different organizations at the moment. Then coming up after that on the 10th of October, I have an interview with Nicole Byrne. Nicole works for an organization called the Comms Exchange, and Nicole has just come out of 25 years of working in a high performance industry, which is Formula One. She's going to be sharing lots of insights with us about internal communications and how they work in a high performing environment like Formula One. So some really fascinating insights there from someone who's worked with some of the leading names in motorsport, but also, again, equally applicable to whatever walk of life that you're working in. I think we're all striving for increased and high performance within our organizations, and Nicole's got some fantastic insights that she can share with us. Okay, so that's what we've got coming up in the next couple of episodes. The next thing I just wanted to make you aware of is that we are offering a free trial for anyone who's interested in using Audible. Audible, as you probably know, is probably one of the leading platforms for audiobooks. And I guess by listening to this, you are a fan of audio anyway. If you've not already tried Audible or you've got a trial with Audible, we can offer you a special discount deal. And again, full disclosure, this is an affiliate deal that we've got with Audible. So we do get a little bit of benefit from this financially. But the reason for that is that we are keeping this show advert free, any external adverts, and we're looking to just to help us to cover some of our costs. We have subscription costs, costs of recording, platforms that we use to record our interviews. So anything you can do to help us with that would be great. And by signing up for this, you would be supporting the show. So Audible are offering a good deal. If you sign up for the trial with them, you can get you'll get a free book, and if you're a Prime member, you'll get two free audiobooks, and they're yours to keep regardless of whether you decide to keep up your subscription with Audible or not. And then you'll also get 3 months for £1 a month, which is normally, I think, £7.99 a month after that, but you'll get a £1 a month for 3 months, and you'll be able to download your books during that period that you can listen to. It's a great way of consuming books. I use Audible myself, so I'm sort of advocating this as someone who does use the platform. If you're interested in that and you want to take up that offer, we have a URL that you can go to, which is bit.ly, which is a linked shortener, so bit.ly/engagingic. So that's bit.ly/engagingic. And if you use that link, as I said, you'll get all of those benefits, but you'll also be helping us through your trial. I'll also put a QR code for that into the show notes, which will be on our website version of this podcast. So if you're listening to this on iTunes, if you go to engagingic.com, you'll see that is our webpage for our podcasts. You can find this episode there, and you will see within the show notes the QR code, which you can just scan, and that will take you directly to that link for that trial. Let us know if that's something that you benefit from, if that's something you value, because we are looking to try and find more of these offers that we can bring to you that add value to you and help you to continue to learn. So that's everything I wanted to share with you. Just before we go into this episode's interview, I just wanted to point out one of the little technical challenges we had when we recorded it. There are two interviewees on this interview that you're going to be listening to. One of them, although he managed to we managed to hear from him at the beginning. After that, we had some real problems with his audio. And whilst at the time we thought it was going to be usable, when I came back to listen to it, it was there was a lot of problems with the audio. So we couldn't re-record it. So what I've done is I've edited it. So you may be hearing from just one of the interviewees. However, it doesn't detract from the content. And I still think the interview is very listenable. So if you're wondering where one of the interviewees disappears to during the interview, because as I say, he introduces himself and then you're not going to hear very much from him for the rest of the interview, it's because we couldn't use the audio. But I used his introduction anyway, because it was part of the introduction that we already had with both of the guests. So hope you find that useful, and that the interview useful, and it doesn't detract too much for you. A theme that a lot of organisations are struggling with at the moment and trying to get their head around is sustainability. Whilst sustainability legislation and environmental legislation is nothing new, it's been around for many years, the increased focus on environmental issues, climate crisis, the damage that we appear to be doing to our planet, and some of the implications of that with forest fires and raging temperatures across the globe, is so now something that is bringing this into sharp focus. And because of the increased emphasis on this, both from a legislative and from a moral perspective, many organisations are looking for ways to make sustainability something that they can deal with and manage. And part of that comes down to it being an engagement and communication challenge. It's not just a case of we have a legislative or legal obligation and therefore we just need to get on with it. Like many things in our organisations, we're reliant on the people who work there to be able to bring this to bear, to comply with legislation, to do what they're meant to be doing, but in a way that is driven by a sense of conviction rather than just having to do it because they've got to go through the motions. So that's an area I wanted to explore, because we've looked at many areas in the past, but compliance-based communications can sometimes be an area where we sometimes struggle as internal communicators. Just telling people they've got to do it because it's the law often doesn't really drive the behavior that we want. So this is what we're going to be looking at in today's interview, that we're going to be looking at sustainability. What are some of the challenges that organizations are facing at the moment, both from a legislative and from a moral perspective? But also, what can we do to help organizations, to help leaders within our organizations to do something meaningful and manageable and sustainable in and of itself to actually make an impact. And that's what we're going to be exploring in today's interview with two guests who are working together at the moment on some interesting ways of doing this for their clients. And I thought it would be something that you'd find interesting. My guests today are Tamer Carell, who is an experienced environmental consultant and a lecturer in sustainability at Northumbria University, and Matt Shaw, who is creative director of Pixel House Media and co-founder of and director of iCore Systems. So hello, Tamer and Matt, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Craig.
Very good.
Very good. Excellent. Good. So let's start off with, I'll kind of go in turn maybe here. So where are you both based? I mean, actually, I'm not sure. I think you're both based similar, close to where I am, but whereabouts in the world are you, guys? Start with you, Tamer.
So we are working out of Newcastle upon Tyne. We have an office at the Toffee Factory on the Quayside, which is quite a lush location. And predominantly operate within the Northeast, although looking to expand further afield in the UK.
Excellent. And that's where you are as well, Matt, I know.
It is, yep.
excellent. Yeah, so you're not far away from me, but we're doing this virtually. So let's start with you, Tamer. I mentioned there you're an environmental consultant and lecturer, and you're at Northumbria University. Just tell us a little bit about maybe your career to date and a little bit more about what being an environmental consultant and lecturer involves.
Yeah, I mean, those are two of the hats that I wear, amongst a fair few more, if I'm totally honest. So I have been an environmental consultant and trainer for over a decade now. I've worked at a number of different companies in a number of different roles around the environment. So from marine biology to agriculture to conservation, and ultimately ending up in what I like to consider kind of strategic environmental management. So I work traditionally with organizations to improve their environmental and sustainability performance. Part of that kind of led me to setting up my first business in Velo Limited in 2015 as a specialist consultancy and training provider, helping organizations integrate the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals into their strategic objectives. So ultimately just, you know, trying to make the world better through impactful organizations. And a key requirement of that is, before we can understand how businesses can do better towards sustainability, you need to understand kind of the basics of you know, the regulatory framework in which they operate, the context, what's relevant in the UK, how the world is changing. And I developed a bit of a niche specialism for environmental legislation, which is what has brought Matt and I together. And we co-founded iCore Systems a couple of years ago to bring forward a cloud-based solution that helps organizations at least get to grips with the bare minimum of legal compliance before they can decide what to do better or how to do better. I work as an associate lecturer at Northumbria University, so I'm not a full-time academic. Yeah. I deliver a number of lectures on sustainability in organizations in a business context. I also consult for offshore renewables, which is really, really interesting. And then just for good measure, I'm also doing a part-time MBA. So quite a spread of activity going on at the moment.
Very busy. Yeah, very busy. Yeah. Well, thanks, Tama. And Matt, and you and I, we've known each other a long time now. But just for our listeners, tell us a little bit about what you do. And also, I think Tama's alluded to this, how you've ended up working with Tama on these projects that you're doing together.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, like you say, we've known each other for quite a long time now. I think probably almost the entirety of my self-employed career now.
That's right.
But yeah, I'd set up Pixel House about 12 years ago, I think it was. We've done lots of digital communication projects, things like animations, online tools and e-learning, quite a bit of gamification of more traditional communications as well. So stuff to just deliver messages in a more entertaining, engaging way. I found that a lot of the time I was approached with a problem, and I enjoyed finding a creative solution for those problems, really. So it just sort of, that's what I started to really enjoy doing, stepped away from things like websites and focused more on these larger projects.
Okay.
My focus completely to what I've been calling like good work, good projects. So ethically and socially responsible projects, really, particularly around environmental and sustainability based work. Like examples would include, I think I'm on number 20 something animations for the Durham University Sustainable Development team, the SDG team there. So yeah, it's quite a big focus there. So yeah, a lot of this work has been around setting responsibilities and communicating change quite often within an organization as well as externally. And one of these many problems that I've been approached with came in the shape of quite a substantial rant from Tama a few years ago, basically around trying to deliver some of one aspect of her work that really could have been streamlined. So I sort of put my hand up in the office that we share and said, well, actually, there's probably an easier way of doing that. And yeah, so iCore began in its sort of lean form.
Excellent, Matt. That's brilliant. Thanks for that explanation and a good story. Then, as you say, we've known each other for a long time. So let's get into the meat of the conversation then, which is kind of in a week we're recording this, where the world seems to be ablaze, you know, with hot temperatures and fires and all sorts of obvious ramifications of the damage we're causing to the planet. And a lot of organizations now are either morally or illegally feeling an obligation to try and do something about this now. And sustainability is obviously something that's familiar to many of them. I just thought it'd be interesting just to maybe just spend a little bit of time thinking about, there are obvious drivers of sustainability in organizations. Some of it is legislative, some of it is this desire to do something. But what are some of the challenges they're facing in response to this? And you know, I'd maybe start with you, Tamer, and of what organizations are wrestling with at the minute and you know, how that's kind of whole legislative and moral dilemma or landscape is playing itself out with them.
Okay, so I think some of the challenges for organizations is foundational. It comes down to the words that are used around sustainability and kind of understanding what they mean scientifically and academically. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I come across is, you know, sustainability is something that you do. And we definitely use the word in that way. But academically, sustainability is a destination. It's an end goal that we're trying to achieve. And when I was at university doing my first master's in environmental management, it was described to me as the triple bottom line. This destination of sustainability is triple bottom lined. And it's this idea of a world where people, planet, and profit are all equal and equitable. And that's kind of the destination that we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. The analogy that was used was to imagine a three-legged stool. So you've got a three-legged stool, people, planet, profit, each of those legs. And if they're equal and equitable, you have a perfectly functional, a perfectly sustainable three-legged stool. Mm. However, if one of those legs is too short, or one of those legs is too long, then the stool will topple over. It is unsustainable. Mm. So sustainability is the destination, and the route towards sustainability is something called sustainable development. Mm. And that, as a term, was defined in 1987 as, you know, meeting the needs of people now and in the future whilst getting back into environmental limits and ultimately regenerating the planet for future generations to leave it in a better place than it is right now.
Mm, yeah.
I think what has really changed for people, so I say organizations, but, you know, with the assumption that organizations are made up of people, is climate change was always a future event that we were trying to prevent. But definitely events of the last, you know, kind of 5 years, COVID included, some really extreme and severe weather events that we're seeing globally, the consistency of those, you know, that they're getting more frequent, more extreme, we're having less time to recover, has kind of, you know, woken the world up to the fact that climate change is no longer a future event. It's here and now. And definitely one of the hardest learnings through COVID was that we as humans are very vulnerable to a changing world, and it will affect us. It does affect us. So I think, you know, one of the most positive things that came out of the lockdowns, that came out of COVID, was people recognizing that we need to take sustainability seriously if we want to continue to survive and thrive. And that is driven, I feel, mostly from an ethical, moral perspective. Legislation is coming in for the government because that is how the government will achieve sustainability. And obviously, that's a big driver for organizations. But I also, if we take that triple bottom line perspective, people, planet, profit, we see sustainability has financial implications for organizations, the cost of living, the cost of energy right now, supply chain issues, recruitment, retention, you know, thriving workforces, like all of those are ultimately sustainability issues. Mm. And that is why it's so important now, because we're really feeling the consequences of climate change and the impact that they have on this route towards sustainability, this journey towards sustainability.
Excellent. Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. And in terms of moral obligations and expectations now, and I know a lot of people, you know, again, it links to what you were saying, Tamer, about kind of post-COVID, a lot of people had an opportunity to reevaluate what they were doing and why they were doing it. In terms of you know, the whole piece around the people wanting to work for an organization that does good things and is a force for good. I mean, is that something you see now and are hearing organizations talking about?
Absolutely. I actually think that this is probably, you know, going to be one of the biggest themes that we see over the next few years in terms of kind of individual influence, you know, or I think a lot of businesses, well, a lot of individuals during COVID, you know, really reevaluated what was important to them and began to recognize that the organizations that operate and exist within their communities, within their, you know, neighborhoods directly affected their quality of life. I know for a lot of businesses at the moment, there is definitely a much higher level of scrutiny from external stakeholders. And I do actually fully encourage it. I think as consumers, we should be more critical of the information organizations are giving us about their environmental performance. We should feel empowered to ask more questions. We should be empowered to ask for clarification about what it means. And most certainly, individuals tend to have a, you know, at least a basic ethical awareness of, I don't want to do a job that is fundamentally bad for the planet or that is fundamentally going to do harm to, you know, human health and well-being or local communities or affect future generations. Obviously, the world of work post-COVID has been quite chaotic and we're still very much feeling the effects of that. And there is a really significant you know, skills gap for some of the most critical sectors, the most critical areas that will help in this transition towards sustainability. But again, I think individuals are more empowered in recognizing that they have a choice about the businesses that they can work with, and definitely those that are performing at much higher levels of sustainable, ethical, you know, environmental performance are more successful in attracting and retaining top caliber staff. Those organizations that are, you know, ticking the boxes but not necessarily walking the walk, you do tend to see higher levels of turnover, because I think, I don't know, maybe it's more how I feel, maybe I'm projecting that, but I do think overall individual tolerance of unethical and unsustainable behavior has really shifted. You know, we most of us want better, we expect better, and organizations certainly have to rise to meet that challenge, both in terms of delivering products and services to their customers, but actually, you know, just to ensure their own sustainability and viability and make sure that they can attract, you know, top quality staff to help them towards their you know, journey.
Anyway, look, let's just move on then to talk about, you know, kind of fundamentally, I think, you know, definitely the connection between us and what I do and something that's really fascinates me, which is this, and I see it not just with sustainability, but obviously we're looking at this from a sustainability perspective, which is this whole, and I see it a lot with health and safety and other regulatory elements, which is we, you know, we go through this kind of tick box exercise. We do it all in a very kind of, you know, a way that is very, you know, minimal that we need to do to comply with legislation versus actually, you know, kind of, you know, believing in it and kind of wanting to do it and throwing our hearts and souls into it. So I think a lot of, you know, and again, I'm not accusing any organization, and this is where I'd be interested to get your experience, which is it's sometimes with legislative things, you know, I always believe there's you know, there's changes driven by wanting to chase an opportunity, wanting to avoid pain, or legally being obliged to do it. Usually organizational change falls into one of those, or some are more or one of those three categories. And legislative stuff is often the most boring, because, you know, it's running away from a tiger or running towards a sort of a nice shiny thing that you want are two kind of very emotional things, but doing it because we have to do it is often the thing that people get least stimulated by. So I'm interested in, you know, your thoughts on that. And obviously, Matt, you and I have done some work on this with our clients in health, and particularly from a health and safety perspective. But what are some of the challenges that you see there in organizations? And I know some of you, this work you're doing is a kind of an answer to that, to make employees and managers who manage those employees deliver this stuff in a much more less compliance and more conviction, as in, you know, wanting to do it rather than having to do it perspective.
Yeah, I mean, for legislation, so I would agree, generally, it is, you know, quite challenging, quite boring. I'd say that that's probably true for other every other area of legislation, except for environment, because that's fascinating, of course. or at least it's our mission to kind of change that perspective. I think actually the first barrier to legislation is accessibility. So you know, my background is working in international frameworks for environmental management systems within organizations. So essentially, if a business says we want to do environmental management, or we want to progress towards sustainability, or we want net zero, or we want ESG, or, you know, any other kind of sustainability framework implemented, part of that journey is to understand the regulatory framework in which you operate. So before you can do better, before you can do sustainable development towards sustainability, you have to bare minimum, not be breaking the law. And that seems pretty basic, but obviously that taps into organizational risk. If you are breaking the law, if you are causing pollution, that opens your organization up to immense amounts of risk, potentially prosecution, because it is a crime to cause harm to the environment. So, you know, there's, again, that triple bottom line driver. It's people, planet, and profit is, you know, a good reason why legislation should be understood at an organizational level.
Yeah.
I think the practicalities of that are really hard. So especially here in the UK, and, you know, the difference between England and Scotland, for example, in England, other than the government websites which produce raw legislation, there isn't really a single freely accessible, you know, database that helps businesses understand what is changing in terms of environmental legislation. So it's, you know, the first barrier is, where do I find this information? How do I know what information I'm supposed to be looking at? I've read the law now in, you know, all its complicated legalese, and yet I'm still sitting thinking, I don't know what this means, or I don't know what it means to us. I don't know what it means to our organization. And that is definitely, you know, where Matt and I have come together, is we want to answer that question. We, you know, bring all that information and then help organizations figure out, what does this mean to us? Now, obviously, the bare minimum of not breaking the law, not causing pollution, is, you know, the first ideal outcome. But the second ideal outcome is that once you understand the parts of the environment that are regulated based on your activity, you also now have a list of areas that you can do better at. Because if they're foundationally protected by legislation, then obviously those are the parts of the environment that are most important in terms of where you need to do better so that we can progress towards sustainability. And although, you know, regulation has a bad rep, it's administrative burden, it's red tape, sometimes it's very expensive for businesses, and all of that, you know, can be true. But ultimately, environmental laws exist to protect the environment from human activity in order to ensure human survivability, to protect our most basic needs, clean air, clean food, and clean water. So when I'm working with my clients, as much of a burden as it can seem sometimes, I try to remind them that the intention of legislation is to protect us all, protect the environment, and to protect communities and societies, and to protect organizations ultimately. And sometimes that can be enough of a motivation to kind of plow through the complexities of getting to grips with legislation.
I mean, I know it's difficult because there is probably so much of it. I mean, you've got an example of a piece of legislation that organize. And again, I don't want to kind of turn this into a kind of, you know, a legal, navigating your way through the legal framework. But I'd be
sure, because I can talk about this.
I'm sure you can. But no, I'm just interested to sort of, you know, so here's an example of something that organizations are obliged to do that they probably don't realize that they're meant to be doing.
Absolutely. And once they
know they do it, they're like rabbits in a headlight, because, oh my God, what do I do about this? So if you should maybe just put a little bit of kind of like shape to this, Tamer.
Yeah, absolutely. So my favorite example is actually waste legislation. which applies to absolutely every business, regardless of your shape, size, sector, industry, activities. So there are specific laws that tell businesses what they can and can't do with the waste that they produce as a result of their organizational activities.
Yeah.
And if I say waste management just off the top of my head, I'm thinking about 8 separate pieces of legislation that kind of cover waste in different ways, shapes, or forms. But fundamentally, the legislation says that as an organization, you have a duty of care to understand exactly where your waste goes to. Mm. So you need to understand all of your waste carriers, all of the disposal sites. Is it recycled? Is it going to landfill? Is it going to energy from waste? You need to know that information. It's part of your producer responsibility. All waste needs to be transferred to authorized individuals and accompanied by appropriate paperwork. Mm-hmm. And every organization needs to apply the waste hierarchy, that reduce, reuse, recycle that we see almost everywhere, actually has become quite popular. That's actually a legal requirement that businesses, before they throw stuff away, should apply this hierarchy of what can we reduce, what can we reuse, what can we recycle, before we ultimately make the decision to throw this stuff away.
Yeah.
And obviously, the bigger an organization gets, more complicated waste streams that there are, that can be quite complicated. But the exact same law applies to a sole trader, or Matt and I operating in an office, even though we produce very small amounts of waste, there is still waste.
Yeah.
And there are things we're allowed to do with it and we're not allowed to do with it legally. And that's usually quite insightful. Most businesses, in my experience, can do better with waste from a legal perspective and then from a sustainability perspective going forward.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting, it is, it's interesting.
It is interesting.
And I guess, so let's kind of moving on then. So what we've talked about the kind of the moral and the kind of, the organizational purpose and obviously legislative. I know when we spoke prior to the recording, we were talking about the two areas that you help and are really important to address. So this sort of awareness and education, so making people understand what it is they're meant to be doing, how they're meant to be doing it, but mm-hmm. then also getting them to actually do something about that, in not just as in standing up and saying this piece of legislation dictates that we must do this, therefore we must do it, actually getting people engaged in that. And that's maybe we can bring Matt, because I know that's something you do it a lot of, and maybe both of you into that sort of element of it. So around the awareness and education then, I guess you've kind of just illustrated there, Tamar, in terms of there's a lot of stuff there we need to know about, and that's just one small section. What are some of the other awareness and education pieces that organizations need to be aware of, and what can they be doing to do that better, do you think?
I think, again, one of the misconceptions, and this goes back to a point that Matt made earlier, is that typically within organizations, environmental management or sustainability is one person's job, or it's a job that's been assigned to a person who already does other stuff, and this then becomes part of their role. Specifically from a legislative perspective, and then most definitely from a journey towards sustainability, it requires a multidisciplinary approach. There are different parts of legislation, compliance, for example, like the plastic packaging tax, where your finance department is the best person to be dealing with that because they have that data. Other areas sit better within HR, other areas sit better within like ops managers or facilities managers or transport managers or whatever. So I think, that's kind of the first challenge, is that we need to break down those barriers where sustainability happens in silo and start getting other people in the business engaged in parts of sustainability or parts of environmental management that are most relevant to them, so that you can streamline these processes. It's ultimately a big change management project, which means different people need to be involved at different points, and they need to have the competence and confidence to be able to contribute positively towards progress.
Mm. Yeah, so it's that kind of dispersed ownership within the organization, rather, and I've seen that. I'm using kind of health and safety as my kind of experience of this, is which is very much, the moment it becomes the health and safety manager's perceived job to be doing this, then you've kind of lost. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, something we're all working on, and the the professional who knows all of the sort of technical side of it is there really just as a facilitator. And I guess that's what you're saying there about
absolutely.
Yeah.
Said, it is really important that everybody understands that if we're asking them to do something, you know, that they can see the benefit and the impact of that activity and how it contributes to the bigger picture. And,
yeah.
you know, it does that. It creates that kind of warm, fuzzy feeling. You know, I'm doing something good. I know I'm contributing positively, but also I think it strengthens teams, you know, because it does stop that siloed isolation. Everybody can see what everybody's doing.
Mm.
I think one of the other things that Matt spent a lot of time on is also, you know, just kind of tapping into some of the gamification in terms of making progress towards sustainability. So, you know, being able to kind of tick things off a list and that satisfaction of I knew I had a job to do and now I've closed that job and I can see the progress and it's all filtering into everything else. Mm. And as Matt said, actually making everything visually aesthetically pleasing, because legislation is boring. So if we can't kind of make that more sexy, then how do we present it in a way that is going to make people sit down and pay attention for a lot longer?
Definitely.
And actually take time to engage. And Matt is, you know, just exceptionally talented at this.
So, and I guess that we're not just talking about the awareness and education, we are talking about the application and getting mm-hmm. people involved. Yeah, I guess it's, I remember when I used to do a lot more change stuff. We used to talk about, you know, making it tangible, making it
yes.
visible, making it, and we used to use the analogy of, I remember, and funnily enough, it's a waste analogy for years. So when I used to work at a food company, and this is where I kind of cut my teeth on, you know, kind of making boring things more interesting and kind of was the kind of precursor to what I do now, was they used to generate waste film, you know, because it was a food factory and there were packaging stuff and it was aluminium lined foil, which wasn't very cheap. It was expensive stuff. So we used to, rather than saying, you know, it's like X thousand pounds or even, you know, that we've wasted it, we would like quantify it in terms of a kind of how many family hatchbacks of cars yeah. we've wasted. And in the idea that that's something, you know, without being patronizing, but that's people could relate to being able to buy four Ford Focuses or whatever, whereas, you know, I don't know how much that would equate to, but like £80,000 was like probably, you know, three or four times their annual salary.
Yeah.
It was something that, you know, I'm never going to have that amount of money. So I don't kind of worry when you tell me you've lost that because you're a big company and you can afford to. But I could imagine, you know, buying a brand new Ford Focus and then destroying it with a sledgehammer and how that would feel. You know, it's kind of making that visceral connection, isn't it, to stuff that otherwise just Locally. Seems disconnected. And yeah so I like that. And yeah, and I like the idea of you know, kind of visual indicators and scorecards and ways of being, you know, a bit of friendly competition as well, is really, really, really positive. And that's kind of what you're doing. Yeah, that's the kind of work you're doing. You're kind of bringing, you're increasing visibility, you're making it easier to engage with, and then you're finding ways to help organizations to then, you know, take it to the masses, as it were, and say, look, we can all do something about this, and here's the ways you can contribute, and here's how you can know whether you're contributing or not. I guess that's essentially Absolutely. What you're trying to achieve, yeah, which again is a refreshing approach to that. So I mean, what's your long-term vision in terms of I guess for iCore and the kind of work you're doing, but also, you know, what would be you know, it's very difficult to be optimistic at the minute in terms of this whole agenda when you watch the news and see what's going on. But I mean, what are your hopes and realistic aspirations for where this is going, both you business-wise, personally, and also where we're going as a world and society and that sort of thing?
Fundamentally, we are hopeful. We know that the world is not in a good way right now, but the science is telling us that there is still very much an opportunity to turn this ship around, you know, to make things better. And any progress is better than no progress right now. You know, doing nothing is absolutely not an option.
Yeah.
You know, I I do sustainability. I do the bigger picture. A lot of that is change management. And as I said earlier, it comes down to legislation being a bare minimum. The regulatory system is not perfect, you know, but that's true for pretty much any system. And especially in sustainability, it's a constantly evolving science. But at a bare minimum, the regulatory framework is what we have. And it applies to everybody and at least tells us foundationally what we should be thinking about in terms of what we consume, how we work, what we dispose of, and the decisions that we make as organizations. And it at least gives us something that we can do better on. I think in terms of the big picture, the government has made a commitment to reach net zero. Net zero in itself is quite a complicated topic, so I'm not going to get into that. But in order to achieve net zero, is going to require a whole environment approach. So we need to look at everything from extraction, production, consumption, and everything in between, protecting nature, conservation, regeneration of natural spaces, habitats and ecosystems. So this is going to get more stringent for businesses and definitely something that they need to be focusing on, because this is the direction that we're going. Yeah. The consequence of not doing it is we're going to see more extreme kind of impacts of climate change, more extreme weather events. And what's quite interesting is that at an international level, there is a lot of debate as to whether, environmental crimes are in fact akin to crimes against humanity, because ultimately that's what it does. It has a negative impact on individuals and communities. And our ability to thrive and survive. What we hope, so we position ourselves with commercial organizations quite intentionally. We've got the regulatory framework. It's a foundation, but we believe that businesses ultimately have the capacity to move slightly faster than governments, and can have a much more positive impact for themselves and for their customers, for individual choices. And we would like to keep raising their awareness. I think we'd like to take a triple bottom line approach. So at the moment we're focusing on environment, but obviously we'd love to bring, regulation for people and profit into that triple bottom line approach, so that businesses can take a holistic perspective to, risk management, regulatory compliance, and laying the foundations for better organizational performance.
Excellent. Yeah. And like you, links back to what you were saying earlier, I think, which is not only opportunity to just comply with, but exceed legislative requirements and give yourself a competitive advantage as a, as an employer, as a supplier, and actually show that we're doing this, the minimum and more. Is another way to look at it. Well, look, that's been a fantastic insight and an area I've mentioned in the kind of preamble to the interview that we've not actually covered before, and I think a really important one. And I think again, a lot of our audience will be wrestling with sustainability. A lot of them will have been tasked with, help us make sustainability more interesting and more accessible, and are kind of looking at a blank sheet of paper, thinking, well, where the hell do I start? And I think you've given us some really interesting and practical insights into what they can do about that. Anything before we wrap up, just to add to that, and I'll just before we do close, I'll just sort of ask you about where we can find out more about your work. But just before we do that, anything else you want to add, Tamara or Matt, before we bring things to a conclusion?
Well, actually, just following on from something you just said there in terms of the competitive advantage, and this is only recent because Matt and I attended an event the other day, and one of the speakers there was saying, the moment, at this point in time, better sustainability performance will provide a competitive advantage, but that competitive advantage is finite because ultimately businesses of the future are going to have to inherently be sustainable.
Right, yeah.
And I thought that was quite an interesting perspective, that if an organization is looking at competitive advantage as a driver for sustainability, which is okay, as long as they do it in the right way, if that's your motivator, there's actually a finite amount of time, because eventually, kind of like fair trade, kind of like health and safety, there is going to be a point where actually this is just a normal part of business operations as it should be. And I think that's quite interesting and might be sooner than we might have anticipated.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah, it becomes a kind of a hygiene factor, doesn't it, really? Yeah,
absolutely.
Excellent. Right. So where can we find out more about you guys? I'm going to put your LinkedIn profiles into the show notes. Anything else that you'd like us to share? Any fact sheets, one pages, white papers, diagnostics, anything that we can share with the listener?
We haven't got any of those yet as a relatively new organization. So we're very active on LinkedIn. So we would love people to connect with us, join us, follow us on LinkedIn. Obviously, anything we develop as the business grows, we'll be sharing there. We do have a website, quite a basic one at the moment. Obviously, there's a bit of work to do on that. But any more information, and then please, you know, reach out to us. We genuinely love to talk about environmental management, sustainability. I love to talk about legislation. So, you know, we'd be honestly delighted to have a conversation that, with anybody that was even remotely interested.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fine. No, you do. I know you do an excellent weekly newsletter on LinkedIn, Tamara, because I do.
So
so if anyone wants to subscribe to that. And Matt, you need to get your finger out and get this website sorted out. Plumbers living in leaky houses. Yeah. All right. Well, look, excellent. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. And I'm really grateful for you sort of dedicating that the time it's taken to record this. So thanks so much. And I'm sure our paths will cross in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care, guys. All the best. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.